Emily Marinelli, and you're listening to the Twin Peaks Tattoo Podcast. I'm a professor of psychology, a psychotherapist, a writer on 25 Years Later website, and a huge Twin Peaks fan. I'm not a tattoo artist or tattoo expert by any means, but I'm a tattoo enthusiast and wanted to make a podcast combining two things I love the most. Each episode of the Twin Peaks Tattoo Podcast interviews someone about their Twin Peaks tattoo and explores what their ink means to them. Thanks for joining.
'17 was a terrible year for me and for so many of us. It was so bad that at one point I opened the notes app on my phone and began compiling a list of all the horrific things that kept swinging my way and the way of the world. Don't worry, I won't read you the list, but it included things like not getting a job I wanted, deaths, floods, climate crises, Trump. You were there. You remember it. For me, one hard and traumatizing thing after the other kept happening. The whole year felt otherworldly, absurd. I kept asking myself, am I cursed? Am I making this up? Is this all for real? What astrological penance are we all paying? I personally was safe and lucky, and I knew others in the world had it much worse than me. I was so grateful for so many things, but at the same time, it was awful. I was deeply depressed and despondent. This was also the same year that Twin Peaks The Return started and ended. The Twin Peaks portal opening after 25 years certainly helped temporarily alleviate the pain and suffering. I would wait all week, listening to rewatch and theory podcasts until Sundays would finally come and Lynch Frost would give me what I was so patient for. Well, sort of, in the way that Lynch both does and doesn't give you what you want. I was in awe watching The Return, and I felt so lucky to be witnessing such an artistic masterpiece in my lifetime. But then the series ended. Again. The glimmer in the darkness of the year from hell had flickered out. I would do my best to keep it alive by writing and talking about Twin Peaks, but I have to say, it really didn't help my mood to have the show I love so much disappear again. My spirit was unwell. A tattoo was in order. But what better way to commemorate this bizarre and paranormal time than a blue rose piece? The blue rose, that which is not found in nature, that which is otherworldly, perhaps of the Black Lodge, perhaps of alien nature, other universes, something mysterious, possibly evil, likely unsolvable. As I sat with my tattoo artist, Garmin Bosia poured out of my mouth. The traumas of the year, the heartache I carried. My poor tattoo artist had to listen to all of it. Brandon Huckabee, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm so sorry, dude, and also thank you so much. Lying on his table, a corner spot in a busy shop, 70s rock blaring, tattoo machines whirling. What felt unexplainable, terrifying, soul-crushing, and blue rose-ish became speakable, tolerable, tangible, and relieving. It wasn't just Brandon and I having great talks, laughing, cracking jokes, swapping hardship stories of the year, and him being supportive. That was all true, and it helped a lot. But it was really the process of getting inked on his table by someone I knew and trusted deeply. It was letting myself relax into his table, letting myself be taken care of. It was psychically letting myself let go of control, trusting him and letting him energetically hold me. It was the healing power of the needle, the way the needles go over and over my skin, forcing me to be present in my body, to tolerate the pain, to be lifted and elevated by the tiny little jabs rhythmically patterning my flesh, the way I'm forced to inhale and exhale mindfully, and regulate my breath cadence just so the artist can pull clean lines, pack in color, and add details. The way the story of the tattoo evolves, first by outline, then shading, then color, then final touches. The way my body follows the narrative being built in each constructed layer. The way, hour after hour, I deepen my psychic and psychological threshold, being pushed just to my limit, maybe a little past, but not too far over. The collaborative, consensual, and corrective transcendence of tattooing is, in and of itself, otherworldly. The tattoo that took shape on my left leg is visually simple, a traditional blue rose with a chevron background. But the process of being tattooed is a metaphysical journey. Getting inked helped me move past what was stuck and felt inescapable. The blue rose tat repurposed 2017 for me and reconnected me to my body, my mind, and gave me soul repair. Tattoos can commemorate a time. They can move us through grief cycles, provide an outward manifestation of pain inside. I was able to regain my agency over the terribleness of that year. I regenerated the events of that shitty year into beautiful art that I get to wear every day. By doing so, I can both remember and also let go. In this episode of the Twin Peaks Tattoo Podcast, I speak with Lane Freefall. She is a British-Chinese tattoo artist, model, and actor. She has frequent guest spots in the US, Asia, and Europe. She works predominantly with geometric shapes, patterns, and layouts, utilizing heavy black where possible, and working with the natural flow and shape of the human body. A lot of the works produced are rooted in ancient tribal design, making for striking and powerful tattoos, both on larger and smaller scales alike. In my talk with Lane, we discuss the healing and transformational power of tattooing. She walks me through how she learned to tattoo and shares incredible historical, tribal, and ancestral connections within the art form. She talks about her love of Twin Peaks, her Twin Peaks tattoo, and tells stories of tattooing attendees at the UK Twin Peaks Festival. Oh, and she also talks about how she happens to have been in a Star Wars movie. Here's the artistry of Lane Freefall.
Tell me about when and how did you get into tattooing?
Okay, so I probably started a little bit later than most people, I guess, like culturally back in England. Most people would probably start by the age of like 18, you know, like it's kind of like fresh out from wherever they are. And so 18 was kind of the usual age for most people to start an apprenticeship, like legally as well. I actually didn't start my apprenticeship till I was about 23. So I used to work as a makeup artist and I used to do body painting, and I've always had a great interest in tattoos themselves. And I started getting tattooed quite young as well. So I was already quite immersed into the industry as someone who was a collector more than anything. And then at 23, I finally had the opportunity, after being laughed out of many, many shops, I finally got the opportunity to learn to tattoo. But even then, it was like such a loose kind of like, I'll just teach you the basics and the rest is up to you kind of thing. But it did genuinely build into like an actual apprenticeship. You know, it still cost me a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And I was working like three jobs, you know, just to kind of make ends meet. I was the first one there, the last one to leave, and taking care of nine incredibly talented artists in one shop. It was pretty hard going. And then I probably, after a year of that, I was then, my apprenticeship kind of, it didn't dwindle. It was more so the fact that my mentor and I kind of got a bit close, and we were there like, okay, we can't really mix the two. So we kind of like parted ways on that front. But then I started working another shop, and I was basically fortunate enough to take everything that I had learned, which is essentially the style that I do now. And then I basically had another apprenticeship with another artist, you know, later on, and he basically taught me all the things that I may have missed out. So things like, you know, color and building machine, making my needles, things like that, like the other bare essentials that I hadn't really collected on my first apprenticeship, I managed to get from my second. which I do like to tell people because I think people have this like idea that, you know, you get this apprenticeship and then that's it. And it's just like, you know, it's okay to have a bit of a downfall. It's okay to have to start again. Mm-hmm. I still got my full apprenticeship from two separate people, but I learned everything I needed to learn. And it's kind of made me a much more well-rounded artist than most people like now, if they are going to go into tattooing now, which is great. So even though I started a little bit later, I am pretty happy in the sense that I'd already kind of matured and known like, okay, well, I'm not trying to figure out what I'm doing. Like, this is the path I'm going to go for and this is what I'm going to do. So after 2 years, maybe 2.5 years, by the time I was 25, I was tattooing full time. Now it's been 13 years, 14 years. Pretty insane. Longest job I've had. Wow.
You mentioned the style. Didn't you talk mm-hmm. about your style or styles?
It's funny, when I first started, you know, like it's so normal to have to be an all-rounder. You know, you should be able to do every style. You should be able to, you know, I started working in a nice busy walk-in shop, which is great. It was Evil From Needle. It's like one of the first real tattoo shops in Camden, London. And it started, I think it opened in like, it officially opened in 1984, which was the year I was born. Then 2 years later, it was a natural shop. So I'm very fortunate that I was there. And it was, you know, it was such a big deal to have the opportunity to work there. And I'm so proud and I'm so happy. But, you know, back then it was like, you know, you started in a shop and you had to just do everything that came in, you know, if someone wanted traditional rose or if someone wanted, you know, like a Japanese lotus flower, whatever the case may be, like you should be able to just kind of pull it off. The first apprenticeship I had was with Thomas Thomas, and he specializes in, you know, like, I guess an all-round term now is just black work, which is very tribal inspired, sacred geometry, dot work, et cetera, et cetera. That was kind of what I learned. That is what I had a passion for when I first started. And I really dived deep into that. And it was really good. And I guess after I think it was like maybe 4.5 years of working at Evil From Needle, it was kind of time to just like move on. And I moved to another shop after that. And that was the first time anyone had actually asked me like, oh, what's your style? And I was so lost and confused. I was like, am I supposed to have one? I just kind of do whatever I got to do, you know, like it's my job. And that's when I realized that, you know, there was such a transition in tattooing that people do want to see a style from you. Like they're just kind of, they want it. Not that you're like a, you know, just like a one trick pony, but just the fact that it's like, oh, you know, you have a certain style that people can navigate to you. And that's when I was, you know, really building my clientele back in London. I was still doing black work. I really thoroughly enjoyed doing like, you know, the more aggressively black, the better. And that was kind of what I was doing. And I really enjoyed that. And then I came to LA and I was working as guest artist. And I think that was, it kind of became a point where people really wanted the super duper fine line, thin, like, you know, whatever, which, you know, from someone who had the apprenticeship that I had, you know, we were like, this stuff's never going to last. We're like, yeah, okay, cool. It's just going to age badly. It's really thin. It's going to disappear. None of it's going to work, that kind of thing. And then eventually I just thought, you know, I'm just going to give it a go. I'm just going to do it and just see what happens. And you know, I pulled off like an extremely clean, super duper fine line tattoo. And then all of a sudden, that's what everyone wanted. And I'm just like, oh, I've just dug myself a hole now. Like now I have to do it. And I'm good at it. You know, I'm good at it. I enjoy it. The smaller and more finicky, I kind of enjoy the challenge because it just keeps my mind busy. And it seems over time, I was talking to another tattooer who I utterly love his work, and I'm so happy I got to meet him. And he says, oh, so you do that LA style thing. And I'm like, is that what it is? So I went, I guess so. I don't know, like, if that's what people want. So apparently it's kind of an LA thing now, like that super duper fine line, black and gray, like all this stuff, like that's, it's currently what I do because that's what people want. And it turns out that there's a very small group of people that either A, enjoy doing it, or B, do it well. So I'm like, all right, you know, my general style requires a lot of patience anyway. So all in all, I usually just take what customers want and I just kind of throw my own spin on it. And that tends to be like, you know, a super fine line, you know, very detailed. And I like to add in a bit of dot work and things like that. So if someone says to me, I want a portrait of something, then I'm like, all right, it's kind of a graphic style. You know, I can't really say, it's a very long-winded way of saying, I don't really have a particular, like, you know, a definite style, but apparently what I do is somewhat recognizable. So I'm very flattered and very grateful that people would come to me still and get tattooed. So yeah. That's it.
I love that answer. And are you still getting to do some of the black work, the tribal, the kind of sacred geometry these days, or is that a little bit quieter?
It's definitely what I've come to realize here in LA. It's people love the idea of it, and there's only a very few people that like to commit to it. It's like, I think the best way to say it is it's a lot of tattoo for one person. You know what I mean? Like I wear it and it's like, I have one piece that covers my neck and a full sleeve. And I think that looks amazing. I think it's nice and it looks simple, but it's actually very difficult to execute. But I can see why a lot of people find it so difficult to want to commit to something like that. You know, it's just like, why would I get one pattern when I can get like, you know, 10,000 cool ones, you know what I mean? So, you know, and a lot of the people that do want to go for, you know, these large scale tattoos, you know, they tend to be, well, I mean, they tend to be the influencer type. And, you know, they kind of go into it because there's a certain aesthetic they want to go for, which means that there's a certain type of artist that they want to go to. And that may not necessarily be me. Or, you know, it's one of those things. We kind of hit a point where, you know, we still get requested a lot of like, hey, let's do a collaboration. And then that means that I have to give up my time and not make any money from it. You know what I mean? So it's just, it doesn't always happen like that, but you know, it can. So I'm still pushing the black work. I'm still pushing the tribal because I thoroughly enjoy it. But at the same time, you know, I'm very happy doing what I do. And at the moment, people who do want to get the larger scale things, I do find myself saying, okay, you know what? Like I'm in a good position now. Like I get to pick and choose who I want to work on. And I would much rather spend my time working on someone who wants, you know, some really cool large scale black work. Or I can just, you know, do infinity symbols for the entire day and just kind of, you know, whatever. And there's nothing wrong with infinity symbols. They're very hard to execute again, you know, but we're going to, you know, it's, I get to do a bit of both depending. So, you know.
What's your favorite way to work with a client who comes in? Like, what's the like, what's your favorite way to have that process with a new client?
With a new client, I'm pretty, to be honest, like I'm super patient. I will say that like there's some, you know, if there's anything, like I will never deny I'm super, super patient with someone. When I first started tattooing, it was very much, you know, just kind of, all right, just a total people pleaser, whatever you want, I'll do it. That kind of thing. And after, you know, after more than 10 years doing this, I've just kind of hit a point now where I'm like, well, you know, especially with a pandemic, I think the pandemic definitely changed my dynamic of working. It got to a point where I realized like, actually, you know, people come to me because they do thoroughly enjoy my work. So now I know when people reach out to me, like, you know, if you sounds terrible, if you do not have the patience to just be kind and be polite and just be like, hi, I found your work. I really like what you do, this and that, or whatever. I don't need you to stroke my ego. I don't need you to tell me how fantastic I am. I don't even care if you kind of almost, you know, like you're just trying to find the right artist and you sent the same email to several people. But I just think a bit of, you know, like a personal touch to it of just they're like, hey, how are you? How are you doing? I saw your work. I like this. Is there any way you'd be interested in doing this? That kind of thing. I'm just happy to do that. You know, if you have the time to come in and meet me in person, great, you know. And then from there, it's pretty straightforward. I really do just go by gut feeling. If I meet you and we're not on the same page, it's totally fine. You know, it's okay. It just means that maybe I'm not the right person for you, but I will make sure that whatever it is that you want, like I know enough artists within our industry, you know, whether in your local place or whether you're happy to travel, and I can say, okay, these are the people that you want. It's not me, and that's fine. Because at the end of the day, I always tell people, I kind of compare it to cooking, you know, like if you're going to bake a cake or if you're going to make a dish or whatever the case may be, if you're having a terrible day or if you're feeling utterly sad, like you're going to notice it in the food, you're going to taste it. And it's the same thing with art. You know, if you're having a really, if I'm getting terrible anxiety at the thought of working on someone, because I'm just like, we're just not on the same page. Or, you know, like they're micromanaging to the point where I'm like, I don't feel free enough in what I'm doing. It's going to show, you know, mm-hmm. the work won't be the best it can be, you know, and it doesn't, again, like I said, I don't need these people to be there, like, just do whatever you want. It's like, no, like I need to find the happy medium. It's very much like, it's what do you want? And I'll try my best to make it work for the both of us, because my job is to put the tattoo on you to the point that I like it. But at the same time, you're going to wear it for life. And I want us both to feel really proud about it. You know, if you hate it because you're too scared to speak up, then we have an issue. Mm-hmm. And same vice, but you know what I mean? It's just, it's, I've had multiple customers come to see me and they want me to fix something that someone else has done. And it's because of that, because people aren't honest with how they feel. Mm-hmm. And then they feel like they owe it to the artist, or the artist feels like they owe it to that person. And then all of a sudden everyone's unhappy. And it's just such a shame, because, you know, people do forget that this is for life. Right. You know what I mean? So I'm just there like, you know, so I think like for me, it's just a matter of, just good communication. And just like I said, I'm the most patient person. So if I just feel like it's not working, I'm just going to be like, all right, it's just not working. And I think that's how I like to work. Just open, honest, be on the same page. More often than none, people are super great. And they're just, you know, they're super rad. And they're like, I just want to get a cool tattoo. I'm like, yay.
I love that answer. Yeah. You know, for me, every time I get tattooed, it's like mm-hmm. a hugely transformative and like psychologically transformative and spiritually transformative yeah. experience for me. And, mm-hmm. You know, can you think of a time or share an example when you were getting tattooed where maybe you had a similar experience that yeah. you'd be able to speak about?
Honestly, as a whole, like, it's definitely a really moving thing for me, like being tattooed. When I first started getting tattooed, or when I first started like trying to find my friendship, or when I first got my friendship, it was a really, you know, strange time in my life. I think I was really sad and there was just like a lot going on, and I was extremely unhappy with myself. And it was actually, the person I apprenticed under, like he kind of saw to that, like we were just having like a really long conversation and we were just talking about life and just everything, like nothing too dramatic, but we were just like generally sharing. And then he was just like, you're pretty nuts. And I was like, oh, cool. And he was like, yeah, you're pretty insane. I think you'd make a great tattooist. You know, like he really didn't even think about where I was at from an artistic point of view. Which I really appreciated, because there is that pressure of just like, oh, you must be a really amazing artist. And it's just like, you know what? Like I've met tattooers who are incredible at tattooing and terrible at painting. And then I've met really incredible painters that really could not tattoo. Doesn't matter how often you've been trying to teach them. You know what I mean? And they are two separate things, even though they're kind of somewhat like, you know, another medium of art. But I think it just depends on where you take it from. So I was kind of going through this whole like transition of just like, where am I at in my life? And I'm super utterly depressed and really like whatever. And he kind of just took this opportunity and he was like, you know, if you're gonna, I mean, I guess I probably should just say it. Like I was going through this terrible thing of just like, you know, a bit of self-harming, bit of just kind of, you know, just a really dark place. Mm-hmm. And he turns around and he says, you know, if you're going to go and do something stupid, which I'm sure he didn't mean that in an offensive way, but he was just there like, you know, you should do something beautiful. So he was like, all right, I'm going to show you how to tattoo, you know. And so when I first started, I actually did like non-machine. It was just all like hand-poked tattoos. He also believed that, you know, if the world should end, you should be able to work no matter what. Hence why he was like, you'll learn tattoo without machines. I was like, all right, great. And I still enjoy tattooing like that. I kind of treat it as like a fun party trick. You know, if someone wants to get something done just by hand, I'm like, yeah, right, I could do that. It's good. It is incredibly therapeutic. And so I started tattooing essentially as a way of healing, which is really good. And then when I started studying a lot about tribes and, you know, black work and things like that, there's one tribe from, you know, way back when in Taiwan, I think. Maybe it wasn't Taiwan. I'll have to rethink that, but I'll send you the link. But like, it tells a really great story that, so in this culture, it's like, if you are sick and you're kind of like near dying, they would get the witch doctor to come, and she would tattoo that person as a form of healing. And if that person healed and survived, they would then apprentice and become the next witch doctor that would learn to tattoo, you know. And I just kind of thought that was like such a moving thing, you know. And I just thought, okay, well, here I am, like, I've been lucky enough to have an apprenticeship to learn to tattoo. And I'm very, very big on propane therapy. Like, it's not like I tell the world that, but, you know, if my friends or if anyone I know is having a really terrible day, I'm just there like, just come get tattooed. You know, you'd be amazed at what you can sit through and where you can channel your emotions, you know. And it's funny because, like, I think culturally, especially where I apprenticed and with the people that I apprenticed under, you know, they're extremely heavily tattooed. And I was told, you know, if you want to get an apprenticeship, like, you have to prove how much you love tattoos. So being heavily tattooed wasn't just like, oh, I love this. It was just kind of like a rite of passage almost. Mm-hmm. And then I come to America and there's actually, they're not as tattooed. Like, it's not that big of a thing. Like, they really do, you know, like, think that the importance of being a creative and being an artist matters, which it does, of course. But that's when I realized, like, oh, I'm actually more tattooed than most people here. You know, and it's funny because a lot of guys always just, they're like, I don't know how you do it. You're covered head to toe. And I always joke about it. And I'm always just like, yeah, I used to be a really angry person. You know, I'm just like, that's basically what it is. I just used to be a really sad, really angry person. So don't feel bad about that. So it's a nice reminder, you know, my body, mm-hmm. I am covered, but I went through a lot of dark places and a lot of change, and I'm you know, it's a, I think it's just very, you know, of course it's not that for everyone, and I don't want to like encourage everyone like, hey, by the way, you know, but I know for me personally, that's where I was at. So being tattooed a lot is really just a form of healing what was going on in my mind and my body. And I think it's, yeah, I think it's a really good way for people to kind of learn to channel where they're at in their mind mentally as well. So yeah, so I consider myself quite a healer, and that makes me happy about tattooing and getting tattooed myself.
Oh, Lynn, thank you so much for sharing that story. And yes, you're definitely a healer, and I really appreciate what you said about the power of healing through tattooing. And
I loved
the tribal story that you shared too.
It's a really great book. It tells you loads of different cultures and things like that, and it's really super interesting. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Oh,
of course.
Well, switching gears, I just want to ask you about Twin Peaks and how did Twin Peaks come into your life, and what's your relationship like with Twin Peaks, when it came into your life, and then now?
Yeah, oh god, I think I'd be so into hearing what everyone else's story would be like. So so obviously being not born in 1984 myself, it obviously kind of came into my life quite young. I think growing up, like, if I can think back, it was my cousin had the Diary of Laura Palmer. She loaned it to my sister. My cousins and I are all like 1 to 2 years apart. So we're all just kind of, you know, and we used to be extremely poor, and we all had to live in the same house together. So we all kind of grew up, you know, watching the show and reading the book and this and that and whatever. But I do remember, even as someone so young, reading the book and just being like, whoa, like, wow, this is like so insane. And like, you know, also just kind of growing up where I grew up in England, it was, you know, we did kind of get into a lot of trouble and we did kind of hang out with boys and just kind of get to all this, like, you know, messiness and things like that. So I kind of felt like, oh, you know, this is very relatable, you know? And I think that, like, reading the book, not just as much as so young, but just kind of looking back at it and just being there, like, you know, if you could kind of look at the metaphors of what she was saying and what she was experiencing, it didn't necessarily have to be like, you know, this evil spirit that's Bob. It's just they're like, you know, I kind of saw it as, you know, you kind of go through this dark side where you're just there, like, you know, it's like choices we make and how we get into trouble and this and that and whatnot. So that was something that I kind of read and kind of really related to. And I thought, wow, this is so fascinating. And then as I got older, I think, you know, like watching the series and just really utterly falling in love with just how twisted everything was, you know, and then I remember watching Fire Walk With Me and just being like, oh my God, like, what is all this? What is this genius? You know, I will say Wild at Heart's probably one of my favorite movies, ever. And I just think everything that David Lynch does is just incredible. And I just wish I could just crawl into his brain and just be there like, is this going to be my worst nightmare or the best dream ever? You know what I mean? So I think through that, you know, my cousins, my sister, you know, like all of us, we were just like really, really deep into that. And then as we got older, you know, I ended up back in London. I'm really good friends with a lot of burlesque performers. And I don't know if you've heard of it. I'm sure you have because it's so fantastic, but there is the Double R Club back in London. And I was so fortunate that through friends who are like burlesque performers or producers and things like that, that I just suddenly found myself involved with all these people who were just as like-minded, if not even more so. And all of a sudden it was just kind of nice to be with a group of people who got it. Like, that was it. Like, there's not even anything more to say. It's like, they just get it, mm-hmm. You know? So every third Thursday of the month, Double R Club back in London, in Bethnal Green, they have a big show. And it's basically like a huge Lynchian thing where every performer basically brings an act that is Lynchian inspired. And they're always so creative and so amazing. And I was so lucky that they asked me if, you know, they basically offered for me to be one of the 52 card girls. I have my own costume. I have my own number. And as much as all I'm doing is a stage kitten, but at the same time, like, it's just there, you know, we eat donuts, we have pie, we have big beauty contests, and it's just fantastic. And I tell everyone, if they ever go to London, like, that's where you got to be. Like, if you're going to go, like, just go have the experience and just, like, it's a whole nother world to be in. And it's just incredible.
I would love to see pictures of you in that whole situation.
So much fun. Yeah, I'll send you all the pics. They are really, really good fun. And one of the Holland sisters, so there's twins and a young sister, all three of them are also the 52 Card Girls. And Louise in particular, she's actually an incredible designer and seamstress herself. Mm-hmm. So she's the one who puts all the clothes together, and she's just so incredibly talented. Yeah, it's just fun. It's really, yeah, it's, I love it. And I'm so glad to be involved back in London. I miss it dearly, so I can't wait to go back.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do you have any Twin Peaks tattoos?
I do, yes.
Tell us what they are.
Small ones, yeah. I have, so I have the owl cave, which is right there.
Nice. Yeah, on your finger.
Same, yeah, it's on the same ring finger in Fire Walk With Me.
Nice.
You know, is there a right way, is there a wrong way, which way it should face? I haven't actually got more than that thinking about it, only because I am extremely covered and I am kind of stuck for space, really. So it's like we're all just trying to figure out where to fit things. But I am lucky enough that I get to tattoo great Twin Peaks tattoos on other people, and that makes me very, very happy. But yeah, I do very much, I would love to get more. I just don't know where, because I really don't have the space anymore.
You don't have skin space.
I don't.
Tell me about some highlights of Twin Peaks tattoos that you've tattooed on other people.
I've started a half sleeve. So I've managed to get the portrait of Audrey and Cooper on her arm. Unfortunately, she's in Texas. I go back to Texas to work every month, which I really love. But obviously, I tell everyone the same thing. Getting tattooed is a huge luxury. So I don't expect everyone to constantly be able to be available and get tattooed every time, every appointment. Sometimes we have to take a break. It is what it is. But I am glad that I finally got to start that, because I've had it there waiting for someone. Like, anyone, if anyone wants to get this half sleeve, like, let's just go for it, basically. So I am glad that I finally started it. So that's probably my favorite one to date so far. Obviously, anyone who wants to get tattooed is really good. When I do actually tattoo at the UK festival, Twin Peaks Festival, I do have one or two small flash sheets. They tend to be quite small, very quick, one and done. At the end of the day, when you're working convention, or if you're working a show or anything like that, the whole point is to get as many customers to get tattooed. I'm not going to sit there all day just focusing on one. It should be a point where everyone gets an opportunity to get tattooed. So I think I've probably tattooed Audrey's legs, changing the shoes thousands of times. The Owl Cave I've done billions of times. And I think that's about, no one's actually got a portrait of Bob yet, which I should probably just draw it ready, but
yeah,
I just can't see anyone who would actually really want to get that done. I've tattooed the words "Let's Rock" 1,000 times as well, which I also love. But yeah, they're all good fun. I always have that, those two flash sheets ready. For anyone who wants it. But again, I think since moving to LA, it's just a matter of refinding and reconnecting with the like-minded people and just kind of see where we're at from that, Mm-hmm. I do actually have one other tattoo waiting. I was supposed to have the fly frog from the new season, from the last season.
Yes.
But that's ready. The same customer who got the half sleeve, she requested it, but then it was on hold. So now it's just been sitting there, but it is a piece that I'm sure so many people are going to want in the future. So I'm So whenever you're ready, come on down.
Okay, Lane, I'm coming to LA. So just save that for me. I'll be there soon. Yeah. What? Okay.
Great.
It's amazing. Wow. I was just thinking about that the other day, how much I wanted.
Yay.
What character would you love to see have a tattoo in Twin Peaks? And what tattoo would that be?
Oh, gosh. I don't know, because I feel like all the obvious characters, they just shouldn't be. If it's not in their character to get it, then they shouldn't. You know what I mean? I would never imagine Audrey with a tattoo, because there's just something about her that's just so wild and fun, but also really innocent and pure. And I'm just yeah, you wouldn't have a tattoo. Why would you have a tattoo? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, but I guess I don't know. No, I don't. I can't imagine. Oh, I guess maybe Ed would probably be an obvious one to have a tattoo, just because he would just be that type of guy who probably got one when he was in high school for fun.
Right.
Exactly. A school related one. Or maybe a little love heart with Norma on there or something like that, which would be super cute. But I can't imagine anyone. Is that really bad? I just don't see it in their characters. So I'm just there why would they get a tattoo? Although I totally see Twin Peaks having a small little cabin of a tattoo studio, which would be kind of cool. They should do that. That would be amazing.
Yeah. I keep thinking about this question and I was like, who would it be? I think I've said a couple of answers, but I think maybe I could imagine when James has his Evelyn Marsh moment, when he goes off in season two and the show gets really bananas, maybe he would get a knife with a snake around it or something on his shoulder, as he's driving his motorcycle.
I know. It's funny, because he has this whole, kind of bad boy persona, but I'm well, you're just kind of you're a big baby, really.
He's a teddy bear. Yeah, he totally is.
A big baby, so yeah.
If there's a season 4 of Twin Peaks, fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. What character, either existing or new, would you want to play?
Oh, God. I mean, I guess I'd probably imagine that I would be like a new character who gets killed off after 3 episodes. Like, just have this like really weird, tragic death. And it'll be like, oh, okay, cool. I mean, it'd be cool just to be a part of it regardless. I'm like, look, just have me come in and then kill me off straight away. It's totally fine. Okay.
That's a really good answer.
Because I will say in season 3, there were a few people I was like, oh, didn't see that happening. And then I was like, oh, okay, well, she's gone now. So that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. All right, then, well, you know, and I just kind of thought, well, I guess that would probably be me. So, I'd be no good as an old character. Like, I don't see me fitting in with anyone, like, as an old character. Of course, if I wasn't part of the old cast, it just wouldn't be the same anyway. Like, I wouldn't really be as important, I don't think. But yeah, I guess I would just be like a new person who kind of comes and goes after like, let's say 6 episodes, just to be generous. But like 3 would be good enough. Okay. But I would imagine I'd be someone like really weird, just kind of like almost nonsensical. And I'm okay with that. I'm totally fine with that. So yeah, we'll just see how that goes. But yeah, I would be curious to see how season 4 would go about. So yeah. Well, I won't say too much about that because I don't know who's listening or what's going to happen. So yeah.
Any advice you would give Twin Peaks listener, Twin Peaks fan listeners who might want to get a Twin Peaks theme tattoo, but they don't know where to start, how to think about it in terms of design, in terms of how to even begin?
Yeah. I'd say like, don't think about it too much. And that's with any tattoo. Like, you know, I think people kind of get a bit too precious about it. But if you are already a Twin Peaks fan, you're already on the right track. You know, like whatever you pick, it's going to be right for you. You know, it's like it could be the most common one or it could be the most unexpected one and it's still going to work well. You know what I mean? Like I can imagine like tons of people have got a portrait of David Bowie from Fire Walk With Me. You know, it's like he was just one character for a very short space of time, but he was so like prevalent, you know what I mean? And I'm just there like, yeah, of course, like why wouldn't you get something like that? So, you know, or people get like, you know, a dictaphone with, and no one's ever seen Diane or well, not at the time, you know what I mean? So, you know, I just kind of think anything like that would, you know, so it's, I just think if you are already a Twin Peaks fan, whatever you get is going to work well. So I guess like try not to think about it too much. And it could just be like, you know, one small tattoo, which could lead into 1,000 things, or it could be like, you know, one huge sleeve that's just dedicated to like one thing, you know, one theme. And it's always going to work. It's just, I think, just don't think too much about it. Just do.
Yes. It'll happen. It'll be good. I agree. Lena, am I allowed to ask you about Star Wars or no?
Yes. Yeah. Star Wars came and went. It's totally fine. It's been so long now. Yeah.
Okay. Just how is it to be a part of Solo, a Star Wars story?
Yeah.
And anything, it's thing. Like so wild and anything you'd be willing to share about that experience.
No, of course. And you know what? I probably shouldn't even like, it's not like, it's going to make me sound so douchey, but I actually saw Woody Harrelson the other day. Not that we're friends at all by any means. We just happened to be at the same event. And I was like, you know, I've got to go say hi. Cause I'll be honest, the first time we met, the first time we spoke, like officially spoke to each other, he was pretty stoned. So I was like, he probably doesn't even remember me. So I saw him just last weekend and I was like, hey man, I was like, I am so sorry. And I was just like, but we've met. And he went, yeah. And he was like, oh, and I was like, we worked on Solo in London together. And he went, that's right. And I was like, he's either being really, really nice and doesn't remember me, or he doesn't remember me and I'm so grateful. But yeah, so it was really funny to see him last weekend. I was just like, oh God, like, wow, he's here. I'll be honest. I actually have no idea how they found me. It was really just, back in London, I have like maybe 5 casting agents who I've never met in my life in person. I've just been very fortunate that people come across me and then they're just, they're like, hey, you know, we want to book you for something. Do you mind if I represent you? This and that and whatnot. So I was actually holidaying in Thailand at the time. It was like my first vacation in like 14 years. And I got this, like, I think it was an email or a voice message, I forget, but they were just like, oh, you know, would you be interested in doing this movie, this and that, whatever. And I just said, okay. But they were so like really urgent. They were just like, you know, when can you come? When is this going to happen? All this stuff. And I kind of basically got them on the phone and I just said, well, listen, I said, can I just like ask, you know, what it is exactly? And I said, because if I'm being casted as either, cause I do, you know, when you look the way I do, you get typecasted in a lot of things. And I was just there, like, you know, I said, if I'm going to be a drug dealer or a prostitute or anything like that, and I kind of don't want to do it, that's not really who I am. And that's not what I want to represent. Mm-hmm. And, she was really great about it. And she was just there like, okay, you know, you can Google Red Cup, but don't tell anyone I said that. And I was just like, okay. So I'm in my hotel and I'm like, all right. And it comes up and I'm like, oh my God, it's Star Wars. And I was like, oh my God, like I'm going to be in Star Wars. So I was really shocked and really happy. And then that was that, you know, I didn't think, I have really terrible anxiety. So I really struggled to accept good things when they're happening. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, and I kept downplaying it the whole time. I think probably like for the entire year, every day that I was on set, every day that I was like done and doing whatever, and people would just be like, oh my God, you're in Star. And I was like, yeah, it's not a big deal. It's fine. It's not, you know, like, and it's just, and I shouldn't have downplayed it. I think I wish I kind of really enjoyed it more while I was in it. Mm-hmm. But you know, I got to be there, and every person who's in Star Wars gets archived. So if there are 300 troopers, there are 300 of them individually tracked. Like they will all be like logged and they are archived, every person. So when I showed up and they were just there like, okay, so, you know, who are you, this and that, whatever. And I said, oh, you know, I'm the tattooist, which again, I was super stoked. Like, you know, when they were doing the casting or when they were, you know, asking me to come and do the movie, they were like, oh, do you happen to know how to tattoo? I said, well, yeah, it's my day job. Like, that's what I do. And I was like, I thought that's why you found me. Apparently not. So, and they were like, oh my God, that's perfect. And that kind of sealed the deal. Like, that's what they wanted. They were looking for a tattooist, like a person who knows how to tattoo. So my character is a tattooist, and as far as I know, I'm the first official like tattoo character in Disney and in a Star Wars movie. So I was like, this is amazing. So when I told them, I said, oh, I'm the tattooist, like, because when they're logging everyone, they, you know, they take a picture of you, this and that, whatever. And then I said, oh, I don't know if that matters. And the guy was like, oh no, it definitely matters. And he kind of wrote it down. And then I heard that Pablo Hidalgo, who is basically the person who's responsible for creating backstories of characters and this and that and whatever, I heard he was on set one day. So I was just kind of joking, just being there like, oh, Lane Freefall kind of sounds like Luke Skywalker, right? Just kind of walking around being like, anyone want to make note of that? You know? And later the official book of Solo came out and I was made an official canon. So I was extremely happy, and my character name is Nayli Freefall, which is close enough. You know, close enough. It is
very close. Yeah.
But yeah, they gave me a really cool backstory. And at that time, I think, Solo came out just after, I think it's like episode 7 or Rogue One, or I forget which one. And there was huge, I don't even know if I'm supposed to say that, but there was like, you know, the whole huge ordeal about the, just there wasn't enough people of color.
There wasn't BIPOC folks in the other movies at all. Like, and, exactly. And all of a sudden this movie comes in and I was so excited.
Well, so that was basically it. I was like, you know, all that kind of came out, and it was just like, they were saying there wasn't enough diversity. There wasn't enough, like, you know, women being acknowledged and this and that, whatever. And I was so grateful when, like this huge Star Wars fan, on Twitter, actually, you know, she gave me a shout out, and she, you know, linked my my work Instagram and things like that. And she made a point of saying, she was just there, like, she's a woman, she's a person of color, and she's actually a real artist. Like, you know, this is the best thing that ever happened. And I was just like, oh my God, like, I just felt so happy to be like such a big representation, even though my role, like, literally, I think when you watch the movie, you literally just see my arm. Like, it's not even a big deal, but you know, it was very nice to know that, like, you know, I made a difference for some people out there, you know? So I was really grateful for that. And it was an incredible experience. Like I said, I wish I had enjoyed it more at the time. It was only until they had to call people back for reshoots because they needed to reshoot a bunch of stuff. And I was in LA, and then they said, well, could you come back? And I was just there like, yeah, sure. Okay. So I flew back. Everything was shot in London. And I remember, I saw the hair and makeup team again, and I said, oh, and I said, like, so, you know, what happened? Da, da, da. And then they said, you were so difficult to replace. Like, there was just no way that we could find another you. So it was just better to get you back for reshoots. And I was like, amazing. So that's also incredibly special to know that I'm irreplaceable. So
of course you are.
Very, very fortunate about that. I did actually, there was one day when I couldn't make it, and I did hear from the other people on set. They were just there like, they spent an hour trying to figure out whether they should paint on the fake tattoos or just, like, you know, change it up. And we all have model cards with, like, our information of what we need to wear for the makeup and this and that for continuity. And there was another girl, and I said, who's this? And they said, oh, she was kind of like your stand-in while you were gone. I was there like, she's Italian. I was like, this doesn't, what do you mean? And I was so confused, but it was really funny to see that. But they were just there like, yeah, they basically just put you and her in your outfit and just had her back facing the whole time. And I was like, great, it's kind of, I'm fine with that. Okay. You know? But yeah, it was a really fun experience. And you know, if they were to ever do more Star Wars and they wanted to, like, you know, just, like, bring my character back out for whatever reason, I would be so stoked. Like, so stoked.
I want that Star Wars movie. I want just a Star Wars movie that's featuring the tattoo artist and just, like, just the centralized character. Right, yes, yes.
Got my own shop, got everything in space in the future. It's going to be amazing. Who knows? Maybe. We'll put that out in the universe. Hopefully it'll happen. That would be wonderful.
Oh, I just love that. Thank you for sharing all of that.
Of course, absolutely. I'm so grateful that you would even reach out to me. So I'm very, very happy.
This has just been a blast to talk to you. And how can people, are you accepting new clients, and how can people get a hold of you?
I am. Yeah. I'm booking right now. I'm booking, like, I think maybe mid-June. But again, it's only because I have a little one now. So I kind of have to, like, you know, balance my time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, for me, I'm like big, small, big pieces, small pieces, like, I'm down for whatever. You can email me on silverandsalt@gmail.com, SILVEAN for November, SALT. And then you can also find me on the same link on my Instagram account. So it's at Silver and Salt. And that's, like, my strictly work things. I mean, I do have a personal account if you want to just see, like, absurd shenanigans. It'll just be at Lane Freefall. But I think since pandemic, there's really nothing too interesting going on in my life, really. But yeah, that's probably the best way to reach me. And I'm just, you know, I'm down to meet new people regardless. And I do travel a lot. So I'll be in Indonesia next month for a couple of weeks to work. And then I'll be, like I said, I'm back in Dallas quite frequently. I'll be making a trip out to New York, and then I'm going to go back to London in July as well. So yeah. So wherever you are, if you can hear it and you want anything or whatever the case may be, then just reach out, and I'm always down to kind of figure things out for people.
Beautiful. Yay. Thank you so much, Lane. I appreciate you.
Thank you. No, I appreciate you.
So fun.
It's been a lot of fun. I have a sense of jabber with it.
You did fantastic. You did fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Twin Peaks Tattoo Podcast. Each episode is produced by me, Emily Marinelli. Sound design and theme music by Dr. Animal Proof Rock. For more information on today's episode, go to my website, www.twinpeakstattoopodcast.com.
Scott Ryan here from the Blue Rose Magazine and author of Firewalk With Me, Your Laura Disappeared. Pick up one of our books or magazines at bluerosemag.com. We cover Twin Peaks and, I said something last month about if we sell something that I would get a tattoo of Emily as Lil on me. What are you doing over there? Ma'am, put that down. Put those needles and that ink. This is not... Because I said if we sold one... I mean, we did sell, but I think it was my mom who bought it. I don't think it was... And if you just put that stuff away, because that looks painful. That, what if we color? Yes, I say if we sell one this month, we had to sell them 2 months in a row. So if someone goes to bluerosemag.com and buys something, I will, with pencil on a piece of paper, Garmambozia!